meeting to order the meeting of the Select Committee on Affordable Child Care of Otter Tail County. I am also a licensed child care provider, so I bring that background to this committee. And so I just want to thank you all for being here. It means a lot to us that you would take the time out of your day, your busy schedule, to come and share your concerns, your frustrations, your joys, and everything that you have regarding issues you may have with childcare here to Minneapolis. But we can all agree that Minnesota has many top quality childcare providers here who offer a safe and quality environment for children to learn, to grow, and to thrive. In fact, we are rated as having the 10th highest quality child care in the nation. However, too many families are unable to find care or even afford child care currently. That is why we formed the Select Committee on Affordable Child Care, and that we were hearing over and over and over again that the provider shortage and the high cost has affected everybody's daily lives and also their budget. So tonight we simply want to hear from you. We want to hear from parents, providers, and the public to gain valuable insight about what's happening so that we can make better informed decisions in St. Paul, because we care, we are listening, and we are taking charge on this issue for the very first time. It is my goal as chair to work together with both sides of the aisle. That is an issue that this is an issue that transcends party lines. Children are not partisan, and therefore I do not believe that this should be a partisan committee. Actually, let's be honest, no committee should be partisan, but you know, that's a work in progress, right? But this past year we were able to accomplish some goals, such as some child care grants for communities, and we created a task force so that both the House and the Senate can work on long-term reforms solutions. So we look forward to that continued input and dialogue. And I'm just going to allow the other two members to talk a little bit about themselves, and then we'll start hearing from you, the public.
I'm Joe Mullery, and I'm the representative for the where you're at right now. My district runs from Broadway up to Brooklyn Center and from the river to Robbinsdale, and I've been in for 20 years representing the north side. I used to chair the Early Childhood and Youth Development Committee, so I've been really heavily involved in all of the early childhood issues for a long time, and I want to thank the chair for bringing the committee to the inner city here so we have a hearing right in the heart of the north side.
Good evening. My name is Peggy Flanagan. I represent District 46A, which is St. Louis Park, Golden Valley, Plymouth, and Medicine Lake. I'm really excited to see everyone here tonight and a diversity of community and faces, which I think is really important. We've been spending time traveling throughout the state, and it's nice to be close to home this evening. Clearly, many of us have talked about the need for bipartisan support for child care affordability and access, and I look forward to continuing to have these conversations with all of you. I know how important infant care in particular is in ensuring that folks have access as we're bringing new kiddos home, and know that child care is also an issue that is an economic issue. And that when we have, when families have access to childcare, that families can get to work. My own family benefited from access to the CCAP program when I was growing up, and I know how valuable it is. So thank you to everyone for being here, and really look forward to hearing from you this evening. And I'm so excited that there are little ones here who are a reminder of why we're here in the first place. So thank you for bringing your spirits into the room.
So before we begin opening the meeting to public discussion, I'd like to point the attention to the handout, each one of you. If you have not received that, you can receive some. I believe there's still some handouts out in the front there. But it shows a net change in providers across the state and in your area. It gives you an idea of the current a child care environment here in Hennepin County and in the state of Minnesota. In Hennepin County, you have seen a 34% decrease in home providers over the last decade, though you experienced an 18% increase in centers. So looking at this information, we are now going to open it up to the public. We have a microphone right here, and then there's one over there. We are recording this for the record, so if you could just...
I should be talking into this microphone. We all should. But anyway, if you could take the microphone, speak into it, although it's not going to transcend like a microphone is. It's just simply for recording. First testifier we have up tonight is Claire Sanford. Thank you. I've never testified from this viewpoint. This is very interesting. Oh, thank you. My name is Claire Sanford, and I represent the Minnesota Child Care Association.
You're going to have to talk up.
As I stated earlier, this does not project. It's simply for recording. So everyone up here is going to have to raise their voices a little so that everyone can hear.
Okay.
Will it help if I stand up? Is that any better? Okay. My name is still Claire Sanford, and I still represent the Minnesota Child Care Association, which represents about 250 child care centers, licensed child care centers statewide. And I'd just like to thank Chair Franson and Representative Flanagan and Representative Mullery for bringing this committee's show to the metro area. It's wonderful to have you here and for paying attention to this issue. And to Representative Mullery, thank you for the invitation that you sent out to providers in your district, alerting them of this gathering and telling them it would be really great if you could come. I would like to focus tonight on Minnesota's Child Care Assistance Program, or CCAP, for I think if we are going to be serious about achieving affordability, which is the title of this committee, then we have to reform CCAP. Child care assistance in Minnesota is hard to get, hard to use, and hard to keep. It's hard to get because we, unlike many other states, have waiting lists. And here in the metro area, this is an especially big issue because there are only 7 counties statewide that have child care assistance waiting lists, and 5 of them are here in the Twin Cities metro area. And the wait can be as long as 2-plus years when families call to get assistance. So in the metro area counties, those 5 I just talked about, we have, as of May, 6,500 families waiting. So that's likely at least 13,000 children waiting. And part of the issue is that in 2003, state funding for child care assistance was slashed and it has never recovered. Much of CCAP is governed by the Federal Child Care Development Fund. And this was reauthorized at the federal level overwhelmingly bipartisanly in 2014. And thanks to that reauthorization, sorry, I'm going to pick this up and look dumb, but there you go. Thanks to this reauthorization, CCAP is now no longer only a work support, but it's an investment in child development, it's an investment in school readiness, it's an investment in our future economic outcomes. And as such, with the reauthorized law, we have improved health, safety, and training requirements, and a focus on family stability and greater access for low-income families to high-quality programs. So again, this federal law went into effect in 2014. In 2015, the Minnesota legislature did not take action to comply with the law, and we waited. And then we had last session, and in 2016, the legislature did not take action to comply with the law, so we're still waiting. And we've been waiting, really, all of us as families and providers, since 2003, and we've had a whole generation of children now that's been negatively affected by this. We're still waiting, but now we're kind of embarrassed, too. We're embarrassed because Minnesota used to be a national leader on these issues, but now we've fallen behind. We also continue to make CCAP hard to use. The federal government recently sent a letter to the Minnesota Department of Human Services, and I'll quote from it in a second, and we'll have copies on the table if you want one on the way out. And this letter granted only conditional approval for our state's plan to operate our child care assistance program, noting that our state has not come into compliance with many of these new federal regulations.
The letter is especially clear on adequate reimbursement rates for families. And this is a letter sent to Commissioner Emily Piper of the Department of Human Services from the Federal Administration for Children and Families. As you're aware, the CCDBG Act of 2014 requires states and territories to set rates based on the results of the most recent market survey. We continue to be concerned that your rates may not allow for equal access. Thus, the conditional approval of your plan does not constitute a final determination that your payment rates are sufficient to provide access to child care services for eligible families that are comparable to those provided to families that do not receive subsidies as required by law. So, our current reimbursement rates are at the 25th percentile of 2011 market rates. Low reimbursement rates hold down staff wages, they force some providers to refuse to accept CCAP or severely limit the amount of CCAP they accept, and it stifles supply. We're not able to provide as much care and education as we would like. Parents may also be asked to pay the difference between a CCAP reimbursement rate and a market rate on top of the copay they already owe, and that's just a false choice for a lot of families. They're just not able to do that. And right now, our rates in Minnesota only allow parents to access about 1 in 3 available providers, and the federal government recommends that that be more like 3 out of 4. Almost done, don't worry. CCAP is also hard to keep. Families are continuously bounced on and off of child care authorizations. I see a lot of heads nodding. Because of fluctuating income, housing, or other issues. Both children and parents suffer. Children lose consistency, and parents lose money and job opportunities. This letter from the federal government puts Minnesota on notice. If we do not act, we could jeopardize federal funds, which in 2015 equaled roughly $89 million to support child care services in Minnesota. How are we letting this happen? We're known for being better than this, than for not even meeting minimum federal requirements. We have meaningful federal reforms for health and safety, for family stability, and for adequate reimbursement rates that go a long way to improve these situations for families, but we're not yet in compliance with them. CCAP is hard to get, hard to use, and hard to keep, but it's also an issue of equity. 60% of children using CCAP are children of color, and well over 90% of child care providers are women. So an investment in CCAP is an investment in families of color, in women, in small businesses, especially family child care providers. And CCAP's also our primary delivery system for infants and toddlers when care is the most expensive and difficult to find for families. We know that 80% of brain development occurs in those 3 years. So thank you, committee, for listening, and please make investment in CCAP and compliance with these new federal regulations, which are really excellent for kids and families, central to your work on child care affordability in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Claire. This is actually the first time the committee is actually seeing this letter, so that's actually very concerning. Next up, we have Carrie Schmitz. And we're just going to have you go down that way. Mm-hmm. And then state your name and your, for the record.
Sure. My name is Carrie Schmitz. I run, or I'm the director of a nationally accredited 4-star parent aware rated program in Maplewood, Minnesota. I've been in child care for 20 years, 15 of those as a center director. I'll be really brief, but I have two stories I wanted to share. One is about a family at my center, kind of following up with what Claire said about concerns with CCAP. I have a family who is only able to work 32 hours a week. They know they can't work more than that or they won't meet the eligibility guidelines. So here's a family that's able and willing to work more but can't, the way the structure is currently organized. And then I would like to share a personal story about my own sister and her husband in Sartell, Minnesota. They have a preschooler who they found a great program for, 4-star parent aware program. They were thrilled to find out they were expecting again, but then they had to choose a lesser quality program for the new baby. So now they have 2 children in 2 locations. They know what they want for this new baby, and they're heartbroken and feel guilty that they can't provide it. They were actually one family that was really hoping for the child care tax credits, but unfortunately those haven't gone through yet. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Priscilla Williams.
Sorry, I didn't really know my name was going to be on the list. I am Priscilla Williams, and we run Especially for Children Child Care Centers. We have 8 locations in the Twin Cities, and this whole situation has many families. Has Eliana been able to speak yet? Or no? One of our parents, I think, is here, yes, to speak, and I was actually here to support her. But she just represents one of the families that is really being impacted. We at our company have never charged, well, that's not true. For many years, we did not charge the difference between what the county was paying us and what our charges were. And I would say maybe 2 years ago, we started charging a portion of the difference because we just found that families couldn't use us if they had to pay the whole difference. But we couldn't continue to support subsidizing the entire difference ourselves. So it's just been really frustrating to have families come and tour the center, want to come, be so excited, and realize that if we were going to charge them anything at all, they wouldn't be able to come. So we've been vacillating back and forth about whether we should just stop having them pay any of the difference because they really can't afford it. So that's, I'm sorry I didn't have a lot of prepared statements, but I'm excited to hear the rest of everyone's talk.
Thank you, Priscilla. Next up we have Shelley Thunberg. If we can just hold the applause until the end, that would be great. Shelley Thunberg.
Hello. My name is Shelley Thunberg, and I'm a director at a center in East St. Paul, and I've been there for over 30 years. I've seen a lot of changes going on, and just trying to follow up of what's been said, the reimbursement rates haven't moved since 2011, but everything involved in running the center has. It's getting harder and harder. Right now, we do not charge a difference, but we are looking more seriously in the fall to having to make that decision. If that does happen, we know that it will cut out even more people having access to a quality center. And another thing that I just kind of wanted to touch on is where the rates are and how things work. I've actually had 2 families that have been at a job. They're stable. Their children have been coming consistently. They got a raise. Their copayment went from $2 every 2 weeks to $48 every 2 weeks. The copayment increase was more than what her raise was. So they're actually turning down raises in their jobs to continue keeping the care because it costs them more money to get a raise. I think that's just something that needs to be looked at and make changes for that. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Okay, we have Amanda Lederman. Am I saying that correct?
This isn't intimidating at all. I care so much about what I'm about to talk about that I'm going to get over my little stage fright that's going on here and hope that you all ignore it too. So I want to just introduce myself. My name is Amanda Lederman. I am the Center Director for New Horizon Academy in Coon Rapids, and my program is partnered with Early Head Start for the Early Head Start Child Care Partnership Program. So we're really proud of that partnership, and we're really excited about the advantages that it has actually brought to our program. And one thing that I want to highlight is that the consistency that it's created for the families in our program has really given us a good visual of how important that consistency is for children in all of our programs, and that adopting the federal reforms for implementing the 12-month authorizations would be a critical point to help enforce that for all of families. So we know that children thrive when they develop a secure attachment to their caregivers. We know that this important bond provides children with the foundation for which all learning takes place. And we know that learning cannot really take place unless children feel secure with their caregivers, with their teachers. And as a matter of fact, today when I was preparing to come here, I was covering books in the toddler room, you know, as we do. And I was looking around at all my toddlers, and I started to do a little bit of a math. My program has partnered with Early Head Start for the last 12 months, and as I looked around at all the children and thought about the children that have been with us for the last 12 months, I realized that 12 out of 18 children in this program would have suffered from gaps in child care assistance coverage, lapses in scholarships ending, and they would have either been without of our program for a period of time or had to leave our program for an indefinite amount of time because they just didn't have the care coverage. But we were able to retain these children and their families because we've had this additional support through the Early Head Start partnership. So that's been wonderful. But I'm only one program, and I'm only serving a very small amount of children. So I know that we can work a little harder and do a little better for the rest of the children in our state. So that's all. Thank you.
Okay. Next up, we have Diane Harley.
Good evening. It's Diane Halsey.
Oh,
and no, that's okay. I get that all the time. It's H A U L C Y.
Okay.
And I would like to echo my thanks for you have hosting this here, this important committee here tonight in the community. So thank you. I am, again, Diane Halsey. I'm with Think Small. And at Think Small, we advance quality care and education of children in many ways, but in one way in helping providers, child care providers, with training and coaching towards high quality. However, tonight I'm here today as the also as the co-chair for the Voices and Choices Coalition. We are a coalition of people of color that work in the field of early learning and youth, and we are concerned about the voices of people of color being present while policies and practices are being made for and about children of color. So that's why we're here tonight. This past session, the 2016 legislative session, our one and only key issue was fully funding the state's CCAP program and increasing the provider reimbursement rate to the 75th percentile. There's many reasons for this, but the main reason we chose this is because the disproportionate number of children of color that are on the waiting list. As has been stated already, about 60% of the children on the waiting list for CCAP are children of color. And we truly believe that affordable care helps families in two generations. It not only helps the children get prepared for kindergarten, but for many families, this assistance also helps the parents to go back to work. For providers that are serving low-income population, it's very difficult to make ends meet. When I was running center-based care, we served almost entirely low-income populations. The only way we were able to break even was by receiving grants from foundations. And this is not a sustainable business model. It just isn't. And for family child care providers, it's even much more challenging. Our state has invested in high-quality care, our parent-aware system, and millions of dollars have gone into that, and we're building out parent-aware throughout the state. However, it is going to be much more difficult to build out this system of quality if providers, high-quality providers, cannot stay in business. Over the past several years, we've lost providers of color, family child care providers, that have gone out of business because they just simply couldn't make ends meet. Didn't have anything to do with how high quality they are. They had very good quality, but they just could not make ends meet. So we are very much in support of having the reimbursement rate for CCAP at 75%. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Diane. We have Kim Osborne next up on the list. Kim Osborne?
So I'm not Kim Osborne, but I'm Wanda Claussen from Catholic Charities representing Kim Osborne, as some of our things have been. Some of the things we wanted to say already have been addressed. I asked some of our parents to be present. We have a parent present. We also, I have a parent who told me a story about how child care affects is a benefit to her and how child care is difficult for her. And so she has 3 part-time jobs, works enough to pay her car and her rent, and without child care assistance would not be able to work. Some of the difficulties that she faces are she needs to send in are some of the paperwork connected with child care. And so she needs to send in 3 sets of pay stubs every 2 weeks. And speaking from Hennepin County, if Hennepin County is backed up in processing the paperwork, that affects the ability that she has to receive child care assistance. And so that gets cut, which means that she can't go to work, which means that she can't pay her rent and her car, and she falls months and months behind. And so one of our, we have someone who helps work with the paperwork, and we can't make it happen. So one of our, one of the things that we would like to see is a decrease in the frequency that folks are turning in paperwork to help them be able to help that not be a constant thing that they're working on. Thank you.
Thank you. And that was Wanda Clausen, correct? Okay.
L-A-F-F-E-N.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next we have Phyllis Sloan.
I thought tonight was going to be much more informal than it is, but I'm grateful to the committee for being present on the north side. Respectfully, I would just ask that if children are here, that child care is in place next time. And if centers close at 6 o'clock, there ought to be something to eat and drink. But those are smaller matters.
You can do that legally.
Those are smaller matters. I believe Claire and Diane certainly talked about the CCAP piece, Phyllis Sloan, La Creche Early Childhood Centers. I'm the executive director. We also are fortunate to have a partnership with Parents and Community Action, Inc., Head Start, around early childhood and early Head Start working together and specific funds for that. But I guess I would just add that quality costs, and it's very hard, as some of you certainly have said, and I will echo, that with reimbursements as they come from CCAP system, which we are largely dependent upon for serving the lowest income of families. And for whatever reasons right now, we have noticed it's a month right up to the date, and I know that they have 30 days to pay, and they're taking those 30 days to pay at the state level. And for programs, our largest expense is the staff serving the children and being able to bill 4 to 6 weeks after the children are served. And so every 2 weeks for our payroll is about $30,000. So us and other providers are kind of doing this, you know, kind of bill and hold out and wait, and it becomes this big challenge. We don't have time to play the Pokemon game because we're playing the Mech 2 game, and I'm almost serious about that. But anyway, moving forward, it is lovely to see the children today that were present here and are being attended to, I believe, by their parents. But Northside lost a child 2 weeks ago. And as much as, and I respect that Representative Mullery spoke of brain development, I believe that we are dealing with some adults that have some stipend brain development in our community, and I don't say that lightly. And trauma-informed care, as much as we can handle the professional development piece with the youngest, for some of the adults surrounding them, it becomes terribly difficult, almost getting the message to the children so that they carry the message to the adults in their lives. But parents who must entrust, in the absence of, at odd hours, not having child care, whoever is there, you know, uncle, auntie, grandma, you know, a friend visiting from Chicago, whatever, you know, they're caring for their child. And so it makes it terribly difficult as in who's there. The other piece about the child being lost, many of us are aging in this work, and it has gotten better, but not as good as it should be by now for people needing to come into the field so that we can step away and the process carry out. Myself, Deb Tomasino, Kim Osborne, and other providers through Head Start, when you hear that there's violence in the community and you hear the name of the family, I mean, we're all on high alert. Was that one of your kids? It's not one of my kids. And we literally start this calling and now some texting amongst ourselves. And that's the least of it. But families are there. You know, I this last time, and certainly won't make any friends as I begin to talk this, but was, you know, I'm concerned about that there's not another safety net beneath a response for families, you know, not only in North, but throughout all Minneapolis, and needing to figure out, perhaps along with you, what that could look like in response to families, and not standing at vigils after the passing of a child, but talking with families ahead of time and putting strategies in place and working through people that we know. We see them sometimes in our centers, you know, are you doing okay? Are you feeling okay? You know, perhaps, you know, you should go talk to XYZ person or what have you. So some of this is going on. But it's not enough. It's not enough. My other thing is the waiting list is out there and is long. I believe that if tragedy comes to a child, between a child from 0 to 12 at least, between the hours of 6 in the morning and 6 at night when centers are open, and when that family probably should have had a slot in child care or may have a slot in child care that the state has a responsibility, if no more than to support that family through the grief and loss and a victim's fund to help defray the medical costs and, heaven forbid, the burial costs of that child. And I think we need to look at that. You know, DHS is real quick to slap child protection issues onto a family and or, heaven forbid, a center when there's an allegation. But what is someone's role if a family is at wait and that child has nowhere to be but with mom or dad or whomever and, you know, harm comes to them in those hours? Now, around affordable care, you know, if and accessibility, if we all could expand, we know the children are there. They're there. But the cost for expansion for us, you know, what kind of resources are we able to go after? You know, I have a feasibility study by a local architect that's done it 3 years ago. It's probably higher now. $1.4 million to put a couple more classrooms on a building that's been there since 1989. And my board, you know, again, we're eating away at that, and thank goodness for our partnership. You know, we're able to set aside some reserve, and, you know, you start inching away at something. But it's not enough. There was a list early on, and I think I caught an email on accident about bonding money that might be available to some of us. But we all know in doing this work, you know, if we're not with the city or we're not with the schools or we're not with the parks and we can't sign them on as a partner, we don't really have access to those dollars either. So I would just ask that you look at that with us you know, as we approach you for insight and or to share information back and forth, that we're able to have those kinds of dialogues, because again, we will do, you know, our very best in the highest quality way. You know, around QRS, our families didn't want it. It's like they knew, you know, I can trust you, I can trust this center, you know, I will be there with my kids. You know, a lot of us don't do marketing because it's word of mouth, and we don't take that for granted. But again, it's honorable that the families care enough to, they were there, then their kids were there, now they want to bring their grandkids there. But again, if we can't keep our old spaces, you know, these old houses, you know, reinforce brick and mortar and build onto them when there's opportunity for expansion. We believe, you know, I believe most of us believe in the universal child care at age four, kids being able to be in centers such that the schools can't do it all, so, you know, that we're another additional option of combined care in support of that. But again, what kind of spaces will we be able to provide for them, and resources and materials and equipment such that, they have ongoing opportunities at the highest level to be served. But we're doing amazing things, I think, particularly with some of us working together to maximize resources around professional development. But these other things, I believe, really need to be looked at. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Welch. You guys, we're not going to clap because this is a committee hearing, and we're going to keep our professionalism. But Ms. Sloan, regarding the reimbursement, you had talked about the state takes a month. That's actually Hennepin County. Your reimbursements come from the county.
I recognize our reimbursements come from the county, but I would like either the state to look at our county or our county, or to have more dialogue with them, because as we in partner meetings around the nation, when I go to Chicago to look at a call to a partnership meeting, and I hear that disbursements, you know, are done differently in Illinois, which is a much different and larger state, but it sounds much more effective than what is hometown, that doesn't make any sense to me. We used to be, you know, again, top notch and right out there with, you know, you want to talk childcare, go to Minnesota. And that's not the case anymore. It's not the case anymore. And we have to, again, rebuild, I believe, and reconstruct this system. So I don't know. You know, I'm the same person. I've had to do a hearing to the special master at the state when the state shut down. So the state, yes, I mean, the county has a role, but the county, it's my understanding, only has the resources because the federal government sends them to the state of Minnesota. And I know that to be true. And I believe most people in this room do. So if something's happening that has fractured that opportunity of things happening quicker or needing to change, you know, again, it's going to take someone else to look into that.
Is Jim Coppa available? Jim, do you want to maybe address that issue?
Reimbursement?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think we have a state supervisor. I'm Jim Coppa. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Children and Family Services, and that's the area of the Department of Human Services that includes the child care programs as well as some other programs that we administer. We are a, you know, as all of you may know, we're a state-supervised, county-administered system. We provide the guidelines. We have supervision. The money goes out in a formula to counties based on a federal block grant where we get the majority of our money, and then there's also state funding. And then the counties follow a fairly complicated set of rules that were talked about earlier, and determine eligibility for families. Also reimburse for the child care costs. So our responsibility is to make sure it's done in a responsible way and that the regulations are followed, et cetera. Sounds very distant, but we are really concerned about the fact that because of the complexities that the current legislation has, counties spend a lot of time doing things that aren't productive to the recipient or to the provider, to the family or the provider. So when we talked earlier, the discussion was around the new federal law and the state conforming to the new federal law. What that would mean, for instance, would be 12 months of continuous eligibility for a family. When they have an income change, it doesn't make your copayment go up. it remains constant in that 12-month period. And then at the 12-month mark, there'd be a recalculation and a new co-payment set, and that's how the program would work. That's one of the things. So there are ways to simplify and direct focus toward things that we may think are more important, but we have to kind of, it's expensive, and we have to invest that money, and we have to make those changes. Those were in our budget, in the governor's budget in 2015, but they did not pass. Did that answer the question?
I think.
Yeah, I didn't have a question, but that's useful information. I appreciate that.
But the reimbursement, taking a month from the county.
That's the, you know, my bill for 3 days, and I thought we had an agreement for 5 days.
And I would have to go and check. I don't know. I'm looking at my friend Carol out there. How long does it take to reimburse from a county to reimburse a provider for on a billing? You know, at the state, it can take up to 30 days, but I'm just wondering at a county level.
It depends on what county you're in. I will get paid 3 days after I send the bill in, and these other people sit here and wait for 30 days. That's wrong. When I can get paid in 3 days and they take 30 days to pay them, there's something really broken in the system.
And what county is that?
And I had a bill in for 3-day payment required of the county.
Yeah. And maybe you need to talk to Anoka County and ask them what they're doing different. Because we have a ton of people in Anoka County, too. We have almost a 2-year waiting list, so it's not that there's not a lot of people utilizing CCAP. But if they can get payments out to us in 3 days, the other counties should be able to also. And that's a huge financial.
Okay. This is a committee hearing, everyone, and so if we're going to have a dialogue, we're going to have to be respectful and come up when it's your turn instead of having a conversation taking place out in the crowd, because we want everybody's voices to be able to be picked up on the mic so that we can carry the information correctly down to St. Paul.
So I'm hearing that there's inconsistency even within the county, let alone county to county, on how providers are paid. And to my knowledge, it is not a 6-day, there isn't a, it is a 30-day pay period. Yes. And that is something that can be addressed. I mean, I have to go back and look to see if that's something we could do administratively or whether that's something that would require legislation.
Okay, Ms. Sloan, does that help a little bit?
Good information.
Okay. Okay, next up we have Annie, Prabula. And we want to welcome Representative John Purcell to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here, finally.
Hello, my name is Anna Prabula. I'm a licensed child care provider in Anoka County. And we're talking a lot about affordability, but there's a lot of other things that go on in child care that affects how we stay in the business. I've been licensed since 1978. I've seen a lot of changes, and not all of them good. Some of the laws that are being passed are just nothing but papermaker for us and frustration for licensing our licensors. Every other year, I'm licensed. My licensor comes out, goes through the whole rigmarole with me. The next year, it's an off year. I get a different licensor who probably looks at the rule differently than my licensor from the year before. So I'm running on eggshells, and providers are running on eggshells because we don't know if a licensor comes in the house if they're going to follow the same set of rules that the licensor that did before. And that's not fair to providers. I think licensors should get some training as well on the rule. What are we looking for? Let's get everybody on the same page in the state of Minnesota. I'm on a website, and providers are saying, my licensor tells me when she's coming. Boy, would I like that. That's not happening. That's not happening in my county for me, you know. You're asking, why are providers quitting? You passed a law that said babies can't have anything in the crib. That's absolutely wonderful. Now, the year that it happened, providers quit because, like me, I had a little boy who was 2 months away from being able to have his blankie. For 2 months, I listened to that baby boy cry. We didn't get to grandfather those kids in. Health and safety, really, really important. I got 2 years to retiring, and I want to make it out without anybody getting injured. I'm very, very careful with my kids. But I had to listen for 2 months to this little boy. And that chews up our hearts, and providers say, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, it's just, it's not fair to me. It's not fair, especially to the children. So there are some rules that we maybe should look at again. Another one that's really, really hard for me is this rule where if an infant falls asleep in my arm, I have to immediately get him into the crib. If an infant falls asleep in a stroller when I'm out and my licensure happens to be coming in the yard when I come back with my stroller and sees this baby sleeping there and it's not in the crib, I mean, it's like there's an awful lot of stress on providers right now for rules that one licensure will say, don't worry about it, put the baby down, you're fine. The next licensure comes along, you get written up and you get a fine for it. Yeah, I've seen in my county, I do referrals, I talk with providers regularly. They get nailed on an infant infraction, they get a fine, they get put on probation, they're done. And I've had them call me and say, I'm done. I can't live this way. I don't want to do this job anymore. So those are some of the reasons also. It's not just money. It's the stress that we live under. And someone had talked about how parents earn $2 too much. I've had families who have gotten a raise, made $5 too much. They lost food stamps. They lost child care. They lost insurance. I lost the family because she said, I have to stay at home so that I can have these benefits because my job isn't paying me enough. I'm not getting these benefits. So I've lost a family because they got a raise, and I lost more than one. I've done free child care for years for a couple of families over the years because these women were really trying really hard to make something of themselves, and they couldn't do child care and everything else. I said, fine, I'll do child care for free. And they were able then to lose their county assistance because they didn't have to pay child care. But those women went on to be successful women. I would suggest take a look at how you're paying parents. You know, you get a $5 raise, maybe you get cut back $10 over the month or something. Or have parents lose only one thing. Maybe we lose food stamps. And then 2 years from now, because the income's gone up, we can lose insurance because they've got enough hours so they can get insurance with their jobs. Take a look at how you're dealing with parents who are needing services, and we're just saying, oh, $5 too much, you lose everything. And they say, okay, fine, I'll become a assistance person and live that way, and they'll teach their children to do that. So if we want work ethic back, we have to help them do that. So anyway, that's my soapbox for the day. And Parent Aware, I think it's a really good program. I'm not going to do it. I'm retiring in 2 years. And so I'm not going to invest in that. But I did ITI training. I have an early childhood education degree. I did OUNCE. I did Essential Elements. I mentor providers. So I'm not a babysitter sitting at home just looking how I can bring in some dollars and do whatever. I think there's an awful lot of really professional people out there who are very frustrated, and I'm kind of one of them. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. And I enjoy your shirt. Wow. That is absolutely true. This is perfect. Okay, Marty Bragg.
Hi, I'm just going to piggyback off of all the great things that people have said, and thank you for being here. And one thought that I did have was that...
Could you state your name for the record? And
my name is Marty Bragg. I'm licensed family child care in Brooklyn Center, and I've worked in early childhood since 1986, long time. So I've worked in centers, I've been a director, I've been a teacher, and now I do my own. But one thing I was thinking was that of all the CCAP families that I've cared for throughout the years, not one of my CCAP families ever was able to get off CCAP and afford childcare on their own. They are not working a factory job and then all of a sudden getting a professional job where they can afford it. So how about authorizing from birth to kindergarten? Some of these families are never going to get off the program. Just a thought that I had. But speaking as a child care provider, one of the issues, it was great what you just talked about, the licensing, the stress of licensing. That's one of the major factors why people are getting out of this field for licensed child care providers. The rules are not consistent, or they're not being enforced consistently. And when you do that, you face, there's discrimination in that. And we have to look at that, that certain people are being pegged and targeted. And it's so stressful. The whole crib thing is so stressful. Like you said, you have a baby that's fell asleep in a stroller outside. It's really hard, and that's one of the main reasons. So more dialogue with licensing and providers in particular would be really helpful. Another thing is there really should not be a waiting list. You know, this is a state where we had a surplus and fully funding our child care system. First of all, it puts more children out there that we all could probably service and benefit from. But, you know, we have in Minnesota what's called the achievement gap. And we have the highest achievement gap between black children and white children in the nation. And it's shameful. And a large part of that is that these families are sitting on a waiting list waiting for services while those kids could be in a healthy, productive place every day. And you want to close the achievement gap, fully fund early childhood education, and get these kids into safe homes and safe centers. Another one.
Hold on a second. I've asked, now this is my third time, about no clapping. I know you guys are really passionate and everything, but I'm just going to ask you to turn your listening ears on. I mean, we tell our children to pay attention to the rules, and that's exactly what, as adults, that you should be paying attention to the rules as well. So thank you.
Another one is that providers are waiting up to 3 weeks right now, currently over the summer, to get paid. And it's when the new billing program came out, it's not even online billing. I'm still mailing a paper bill in the mail. I mean, that's unacceptable. And it's so hard. It's just another stress on us. So I don't know what the answer is, like you were talking about why it's such a long turnover. And I'm Hennepin County, so I can only speak for Hennepin County. It used to be about 6 days. It's turning into about 26 days right now. I don't know what's going on, but it's stressy. It's very stressful. Also, when you call Hennepin County and ask about your money, I was treated so rudely by the CCAP staff. I actually called my county commissioner, and my county commissioner called Hennepin County, and I got my check the next day. But they would not treat me like that, but they would talk to my county commissioner. And that's not okay. They have an obligation to speak to me. They have a job because I take those children. So that's another issue, at least in Hennepin County. I don't know what other counties are like. And my last thing is, too, is that high quality, which we have achieved in Minnesota. I mean, the quality of care since in the 30 years I've worked in this field has gone up tremendously. But high quality also means paying people who do this work at a high quality living wage. Now, for providers, it's a little bit tricky, but that could be helped with raising the CCAP rates, of course. And paying us on time, you know, a three-day turnover, that helps me tremendously. But child care centers that have a four-star Parent Aware rating and are paying their teachers $10, $11, or $12 an hour, that is not high quality. That is not a four-star rating. There needs to be something in these quality programs that are out that translate into that the people who work in child care centers are not dependent on getting food stamps because they don't make enough. Someone had suggested to me, well, if it's too stressful doing your home business, go teach in the center. I can't live on $12 an hour. So there needs to be some accountability, and I don't know where the answer lies. I'm sure there's high overhead in centers. I always hear this. But the people in centers are way higher. I mean, they're educated than 30 years ago. But the pay is about what it was 30 years ago. Just something to consider. Thank you for your time.
And just a couple of things that we had worked on this last session that was signed into law. So we do have a child care task force, and this will, we're going to work with the child care providers and parents to develop reforms on the next legislative session, including ways to streamline that burdensome paperwork that I'm hearing about, also on regulations to create uniformity and consistency in the application of child care laws and address the costs related to a child care business and having children in care. Also, there was some startup business community grants for Greater Minnesota to be administered by DEED, and then a child care business manual, what we had heard on during other visits across the state, as you know, it's just very hard to figure out if you want to start a child care. There's so many different places, and the DHS website isn't exactly user-friendly for child care providers. So we wanted a central, easy, accessible manual to help understand the regulations and processes for that as well. And then that will also be operated through DEED. What we did work on, and it did not pass, but does not mean that we're not going to continue this next legislative session, was to streamline that paperwork, explore more ways to offer electronic streamlined paperwork instead of redundant paper copies, written notifications to providers, giving a written notification to providers of potential correction orders upon departure of the home and facility. I'm a true believer in if something is going wrong, if I'm doing something incorrectly, I want to know on the spot as a teaching moment. I want licensors to help providers be better at their job because I think it's inappropriate 3 weeks later you're going to the mailbox and all of a sudden you've got this correction order that you didn't even know was a problem 3 weeks previously. So use that as a teaching tool, a teaching moment at the time to help that provider be better at their profession. And then also training for licensors and uniformity in law. All across the state I'm hearing about licensors interpreting rules and statutes differently from one county to another or even within the same county. So training curriculum for county licensors to create uniformity in the application of the law and providers' rights are made clear to the county staff. And then also an advocate to create a child care advocate at the state level to be responsive to child care providers. In one hearing in St. Cloud, what we heard from a child care provider is that they were getting good at lying in order to, they didn't want to have a visit. If they called into the county to ask a question, is this correct? That licensor then would make a surprise visit at the home because they were assuming that something inappropriate was going on in that business. But they also did not want to be calling the state as well because then they felt that they were getting red marked and possibly having a surprise visits from there as well. So those are kind of the things that we worked on. So just to keep that in your back mind. And I'm sure during this hearing, you are also maybe thinking of other things as well that could be changed. And I've got my business card, is I believe, up front with my staff there. So next up, we do have, let's see, Wanda was up. We've got Jim Nicoli.
I brought a parent in my place that didn't get to sign up for speaking. Can that person go in my place?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, what is that name?
Denise Thomas.
Janice, okay. Thank you.
Like she said, my name is Janice Thomas, and I am a parent of the program CCAP. I am on CCAP, and I just got a job and got taken off of daycare because of the address. Denial or something like that, and I really need child care. I don't know, there's a lot of different things that you guys do that is hard for people to stay on child care, as far as the reports that you have to turn in and all these different papers that you have to turn in. I can't turn in papers if I'm at work from 8 to 4:30. Offices close at 4:30. So I just think that it should be less paperwork that we should turn in. I heard someone say about the 12 months or something like that. I don't have that option. I guess I'm on a medical extension for, because my 60 months are over. So I'm on a medical extension, but I think that's a different program. I'm not sure. But I just think that it should be less paperwork for people to do. And also another point that I wanted to make, for people that are on waiting lists for CCAP, I think it should be people that are mandatory to work. There's a lot of people that have daycare assistance and they don't work. Like, why are you getting daycare and you're not working? There's people on waiting lists that need daycare and that are working. So I think that the county should make sure that they are working people that are waiting on the waiting list. That are getting the assistance. Like I said, because there's a lot of people that are waiting and need daycare, and kids are being watched by whoever and need to be in centers. That's all. I'm very nervous, and I have a lot of other things to say, but I can't get them out. Sorry.
Well, you did just fine, Janice. Thank you for sharing. Let's see here. Jim?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sit down, but I'll talk loud. My name is Jim Nicolai. I'm retired from the child care field. I spent over 45 years in child care, 8 years as a family child care provider, worked as training family child care providers, worked in the resource and referral, and have also directed center. The last 20 years has been a revolution in brain and development research. We now understand a lot more about what's going on with babies. In the 5 minutes I talked to you, a baby who's under a year would develop 210,000 neural connections if they're not under stress and if they're well cared for. Families with financial resources or extended family resources can nurture that child well. Families without those resources have to try a patchwork of care arrangements. And regardless of how loving and well-intentioned all the caregivers are, a series of caregivers cannot provide the continuity and attachment that a child needs to develop well. The caregivers may also be under extreme stress or detached for some reason, and the infant will become stressed and the brain will not develop as well as it should. By age 2, there's a significant difference also in the vocabulary between poor children and affluent children. By age 2. In the last 40 years, the economy and our social patterns have strip-mined the family of the hours that used to go to nurture children. One income no longer will support a middle-class lifestyle. Grandparents are often working or not available. There's a large number of single-parent families and children in poverty, and too many fathers are in jail for minor offenses. We have to do better by our infants and toddlers. There's a learning and school readiness gap, but the legislature doesn't seem to understand that it happens before the age of 3. This gap reflects an investment gap by our state. We don't support the growth and development of infants and toddlers like we do middle schoolers or high schoolers or university students. The lack of funding for child care is a major part of this. With a waiting list from 2 to 3 years, that means you're going to be 3 years old before you get in a stable, quality program, and your parents are going to have to patchwork things together. I've often counseled people that the only way to get child care without the waiting list is to go on welfare and then have the state help you get off of welfare, and then you get child care assistance. But people don't want to do that. People don't do it. The payment rates and the funding for child care assistance have not always been as bad as they are now. We used to fund child care assistance rates up to the 75th percentile. And then the legislature decided that the market rate wasn't good enough and that they would decide who would get paid how much. And ever since then, rates have been stuck and have decreased proportionally to expenses. It's not possible to hire and train quality teachers and to prevent turnover with the rates that are paid now. The turnover for infants and toddlers, remember, is not just turnover. It's a death in their family. A baby who's attached well to an infant caregiver, and then that caregiver is not there on Monday, they don't understand that it's turnover in the person had to go to take a better job. That's a death for that child. And some children will respond and respond and respond, but too many of those kinds of experiences will really end up with a depressed infant. And we will suffer the results of that. So I would say to the legislature, if you don't study the current research and inform the public policy, if you don't significantly increase funding to support families so that they can have quality child care options, if infants and toddlers don't demand the equal respect and financial support that the older children and adults have in the state, then we'll continue to deteriorate as a state and as a people. Thanks. No clapping.
Next up, we have Julie Seidel. Julie?
Hi, everybody. I'm Julie Seidel. I'm a licensed provider from Anoka County. I'm also the legislative representative for our county association, LCCPAC, and a membership director for MACCP, which is a new advocacy group for licensed family child care. CCAP was hit on really hard, so I don't really need to put more into that, except I do want to say that it's supposed to be a hand up and not a foot down on top of your head to hold you down. And CCAP has not been a hand up for these families in many, many years, and neither has the welfare system. And that's really sad, because we're pushing people to stay poor. Very, very sad situation. There's a few things with family child care, which I know personally, Anoka County has lost 50% of their licensed family child care providers, and a lot of it has to do with the stress of being a provider. You know, I walk around my house, and my poor 13-year-old daughter, it's like, honey, there's a bobby pin on the floor. Honey, you left the hairspray here. There is this constant nagging nerve stress of losing my license over something very small. And no offense to the daycare centers, but when a daycare center can leave a child outside for a half hour in the wintertime, tell their employees not to tell the family what has happened, and then 2 months later when these employees quit, tell the family, and they get a $250 fine, and they're still working. Do you know what would have happened to a family child care provider? Temporary immediate suspension, unlucky to ever get your license back. How is that fair to us? Number one, we don't leave our kids outside. Okay? They've got, a dozen employees to watch all these children, but it's still okay for them to leave a child outside? That's wrong. That's the wrong impression. Why are family child care providers held on such a higher standard than any other child care out there? A young lady the other day enforced her contract with a parent and terminated them. And the next day, the county shows up saying that it was reported she's drinking during the day. We cannot enforce our own contracts for in fear of losing our daycare license. And I'm going to tell you a quick true story. I got a divorce after 20 years in a horrible marriage. When I finally got my order for protection, the next day the county showed up because four strange people called in within 30 minutes of each other and said I was a drug addict, an alcoholic, a drug dealer, and, oh, by the way, I had improper infant sleep space. Thank God none of that was true. That is still on my license and will be for the rest of my life because my ex-husband and his family thought it would be funny to get me to lose my license because then he could have custody of my child. That's disgusting that we allow those things to happen to family child care providers. Anonymous is baloney. If you are so concerned about the safety of a child when you call in a complaint, leave your name and number with the county and make those people accountable. It should be a felony for anybody calling in false complaints and ruining somebody's business. This is my livelihood. This is how I support my child. Even the judge in divorce court said, how could you do that to your child? But there are so many people out there nowadays that are vindictive, that you upset them because, you know what, ma'am, you show up late every single day. My child was late for her dance lessons that I pay for because you showed up late. I enforce my contract, and then I lose my license because they're upset. That's wrong. Something needs to change. The population isn't going to change. The legislation needs to change. The inconsistency between county licensors, the inconsistency between licensors in the county, there shouldn't be this room for interpretation in a bill. It should be black and white. This is what the law is. This is what you're supposed to do. There is no room for interpretation. I know that people have gotten correction orders on things I have done wrong, but my licensor writes it on a note because it's not in any way endangering the safety and the welfare of the children. If I have a contract, or excuse me, admissions and arrangements form that wasn't signed and dated within 12 months, I get a nice little note from my licensor. Other providers get a correction order. It goes on your license. It shows up. Why is that? Is that really endangering the health and safety of a child because the family didn't re-sign that in a year? No, it's not. It's these things that keep people from coming into the business, and it's these things that push people out of the business. Other things that have happened is the push for universal pre-K. Do we all agree here that a school is not the place for 3- and 4-year-olds? And in pushing for universal pre-K, the governor has also pushed for it to be, only the businesses that have licensed teachers that are represented by the union. Daycare centers, family child care providers, we're not unionized. We don't want to be unionized. But that pushes us out of taking care of 3- and 4-year-olds. Everybody needs to YouTube Peter Gray tonight. Google Peter Gray 50 years. And it's what has happened to our children in the last 50 years because of the decline in play. Childhood obesity has gone up, childhood depression, and for God's sakes, child suicide. Because we don't allow our children to play anymore. They don't need to be sitting in a school behind a desk, period. I'm very passionate about what I do. And then the last thing I want to talk about is the unionization bill. I am more angry about anything that didn't pass except this unionization bill. We voted 3.25-1 against unionization, and for some reason, some people up there at the Capitol felt we needed to keep that bill making us state employees. I'm not anybody's employee. I never have been. To make us a state employee for the purpose of unionizing us only is a real discredit and a disgrace to family child care providers. And something needs to be done. This is why providers are leaving. We cannot constantly walk on glass, I'm not even going to say eggshells, glass in our own homes in fear of losing our businesses.
Julie, regarding that unionization bill, we had it in two places. We had it
originally.
In the,
yes.
And
I know what happened.
Yeah.
I was down at the Capitol a lot. It's disgusting.
Sure. We do not have anyone next on the list. So is there any? Okay, so Nancy first, and then I had that one, and then, okay. So we're going to go in turns here, okay? So.
Hello. Hi, my name is Nancy Hilden. I'm a resident of South Minneapolis, but I'm also an advocate for the organization Mini Minds, which is a coalition statewide of a whole array of interest groups that work in trying to find ways to provide parent-directed quality care for every child. I have worked with so many of you in this room that it's just amazing to me over the past 4 years what we've tried to do. I just want to start back and tell a story. Several years ago, the federal government provided 4 communities in Minnesota with completely flexible race-to-the-top funds. Itasca County, White Earth Reservation, Northside Achievement Zone, and St. Paul. There you go. Can't forget St. Paul. These communities found that the flexibility that was given to them with these federal dollars
made all the difference. Each one of those communities did it slightly differently. It was collaborating with the private providers. It was collaborating with the schools. It brought in other community organizations in a way that everyone just cheered. From those organizations, you hear, that's what we need. That's what we need. We tried to go in and get something like that at the state, and I have to say we still have a lot of work to do. What we did is we started to constrain what a scholarship was and who could get it and how it was going to be managed and what the application looked like. I'll tell you, I've had multiple earfuls from people about the 10-page application form, heard it all, and we do. We have to fall back to what we learned from that initial multiple-year, very flexible, community-driven model. And we are resource-deprived right now. I'm just hearing it over and over again. We need more resources, and we need to give communities some flexibility, and I hope that we can really get there. And, you know, ultimately, whether we're talking about scholarship or CCAP, what it is resource for families who need it, and it needs to be flexible. It doesn't matter what you call it. We need flexibility and resources. We need to have our parents be part of the equation, and these providers who are doing this hard and good work that we need. We need to make sure that they survive. I was heartbroken 2 years ago when the Indian Women's Resource Center in my community in South Minneapolis closed. Quality, high rated, serving the neediest population in our city, and they closed because of exactly what you're hearing today. So I'm not giving up the fight, and I hope that every one of you keeps on and tells people that's what we got to get to, flexibility, and make sure that there's parent-driven quality care options for people. That's what we've been working on, and we have a long way to go because every time somebody wants to tweak it, it gets more complicated and burdensome administratively. But if we can get back to that original model, I think we're going to have a winning solution. Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy. Okay, so we have, No, you already spoke. Did you already speak? No, you haven't spoken yet? Okay, because I had that one, and then we'll go with you. Okay. Oh, that was just in the beginning when we were speaking.
Hello. I just want to say thank you to Priscilla for inviting me here tonight. This was kind of really last minute, so I'm really not prepared. But I'm a parent. My name is Aliana Vasquez.
Can you put your name and then?
My name is Aliana Vasquez. I'm a parent. I have four children that attend, especially for children in Ember Grove Heights. My husband and I, we both work full-time. He's currently up for a promotion. He currently does baler operating at a recycling center, and I'm an office administrator for a restaurant. I do the accounting and payroll and such. And I will be up for a promotion soon, but I won't see that promotion because my child care CCAP is going to end the end of this month. And the reason being is because back in 2002, we lived in Ramsey County, and then we moved to Dakota County. And, you know, our child care transferred over there without any issue. Everything's fine. And then in November this last year, 2015, we moved back to St. Paul, near West St. Paul. We're kind of on the border of Ramsey County and Dakota County. And then after informing, you know, you have to inform the program of the address change and such. And they told me, well, that my child care is, I have 6 months, a six-month pool, and then my child care will end because of the address change, because Think Small currently doesn't have the funds to take on my family as, you know, a permanent client. So, I'm kind of piggybacking off of what everyone said. It seems like these programs, from my understanding, are supposed to help families in need, but they tend to just keep them down. They keep them down. And, I'm a really consistent person. I've had two employers. I'm 28 years old. I've had two employers since I was 16 years old. My current employer I've been with since 2011. I served for many years since I was 16, and now I'm working in the office, gaining a lot of great experience, moving up with my life. My kids have been at, especially for children, since 2013, and they've gone almost every day, you know, besides the days that they're sick and there's vacation and whatever. And now, like, that's going to end, and even though we've had six months to figure, you know, had time to figure out, hey, what are we going to do, it's just, it's so frustrating because, you know, we work, my husband and I, we work really, really hard to keep our family together because that's the most important thing to us. And now, you know, the plan is he's going to work two jobs, you know, day and night, and now I'm going to be at home with the kids. And, you know, my kid, they participate in sports, they're dance, and I do have to apologize right after my talk here. I do have to go because my daughter's at a very important dance lesson. You know, and it's just, you know, now we're going to start backwards, you know, and that's, you know, my kids receive health through the state. I don't. I'm insured through my employer, my husband with his employer. You know, I don't want to apply for government programs. You know, child care assistance allows us to kind of move up. And I do realize that, you know, the higher I get promoted, the more my copay is going to go up, and eventually I'm not going to be able to afford it, or I can't accept promotions. So it's like either way, you know, I'm kind of screwed. But, you know, my biggest issue right now is that in 2 weeks, and my employer is really, really disappointed. You know, he wants to keep me there. And they've been so flexible with me as far as, you know, if, you know, daycare centers, especially kids are getting sick all the time. And, you know, they're always like, you know, go ahead, I understand, go pick up your kids. And you know, any other place, you know, I probably would have lost my job. But, you know, it's just something has to change with that. I mean, now, you know, now that we're in St. Paul, you know, it's a 2-3 year waiting list. Well, you know, we're just going to start over. I'm probably going to have to apply for health care for myself, probably apply for food stamps and whatever else is out there that, you know, we need. So, I mean, if something doesn't change for us directly, which I imagine it won't because we have 2 weeks left and, yeah, that's it. But I just really hope, you know, some kind of guidelines or the requirements, the flexibility changes a little bit. You know, just because we moved back to Ramsey County, why, you know, we work very, very hard. You know, I've always worked since I was 16 years old. I don't abuse the program. My kids, you know, they love, especially for children, they're very attached to, you know, Miss Amanda, who's in the toddler room, Miss Amanda, who's in the baby room, Roxy, Flea, you know, they really enjoy us being there. And it's like, you know, there's not really options for us to still partake in that program because, you know, as you can imagine, for children, child care costs out of pocket is not an option. So that's my story. Thank you. I have to go.
And then we had, yep.
Hello. I hope I can get through this without emotion. My name is Joanne Kelty. I live here in North Minneapolis. And I wasn't planning to speak, but as I sit here listening to it, I realize the years and years and years of dealing with this.
Can we get your name? I'm so sorry.
Joanne Kelty, K-E-L-T-Y. The years and years of dealing with this, it's just like, you know what? It's time we got it all together here somehow, some way in Minnesota. I'm here to say I'm not a parent. I am not a daycare provider, although I was at one time. I am a grandparent. That whole waiting list for CCAP is crap. You get on it, you go off of it. You get on it, you get off of it. And you can't figure out how to stay on it. My granddaughter is 17 and never did get on it. She aged out. My grandson is 4 and a half. He is not on it. I'm telling parents, if you think you're going to need it the day they're born, go and apply. Because that's the only way that you are going to have it by the time you get a job. And I have to tell you, without it, the numbers don't work. My daughter has a disability, so she is never going to have a high-paying job. Never. It won't work. But she does work. You work for $10 an hour, 8 hours a day, and you can find two-star parent-rated daycare for $60 a day. You're working for $20 a day. The only reason to keep working is because you have the advantage of the income, earned income tax credit. That is the only thing that brings you up to an income that you can barely live on. So in order to make it work, I, as a grandparent, work full-time, and I spent many, many evenings and weekends providing daycare so that she could continue to work so as to not have to take cash assistance, but she still needs the food stamps, etc. But you know what? It's really, really hard. And it's time that somehow, some way, in the state of Minnesota, that we could get this to work. And I'm sorry that there isn't a county commissioner here tonight, because that whole Hennepin County computer system that does not link with the state, so they can't communicate with each other until they have sent out 14 letters saying you don't qualify, 7 letters saying you don't qualify, and the next 7 letters, oh yeah, it's 2 days later, we did get everything on time, and now you do qualify. So you spend time away from my job, trying to make phone calls, trying to figure out what the heck is doing with Hennepin County computer system. You know, the whole thing, somebody said you still have to send things in by paper. How in 2016 do we not have a system that we can go on the web and find out if we're still on that child care assistant list? You can't even go and check without making phone calls and waiting on hold for sometimes, well, a minimum of 10 minutes, sometimes an hour or more. You know, the whole system has to be fixed somehow. I just, you know, this is ridiculous that we can't figure this out.
Thank you. Yep.
Hello, good evening, and thanks for organizing this. My name is Mary Kay Stronach. Can you hear? I was having trouble back there. Okay. My name is Mary Kay Stronach, and I'm the retired executive director of a national parenting education program called MELD that doesn't exist here in the Twin City area anymore. And I'm also very proud to be a member of the Elders for Infants, a new organization that we're all volunteers and trying to really look out for infants in this very, very big system that you all have been talking about all evening. I just want to give credit, never having done child care myself except, of course, informally for family, everyone, I think, really does recognize or should recognize the fact that child care providers are the second only to the family in terms of the quality of life of infants and toddlers and older children as well, but you can tell my vision is a little narrow tonight. So many good points have been made, and I just want to reemphasize the important things for infants and toddlers, and that's the consistency of providers. And you all have done said many of the reasons why there isn't consistency. And the small number of infants that have to be in relation to the providers. And you've also highlighted why that isn't able to happen in terms of the income of family or center providers. And one thing that hasn't been mentioned yet is the importance of transferring the culture of the child to the child from the very beginning. And that's really critical also for infants and toddlers. You've talked all about the reasons for the inconsistency, as I said, and the cost of childcare. But I just want to say that we didn't talk a whole lot about training, and I think that that really needs to be very high on the list in terms of quality of childcare. And also the funding of existing programs, both for providers, for families, and also for training. But I sort of have been thinking, sitting back there listening to everybody, you know, Wendy Anderson just died this week, a former governor, and she did the Minnesota Miracle, the Minnesota Miracle for how taxation and supported the school system. And I'm thinking that right now we really do need an overview, a look and overlook at overall change and do a Minnesota Miracle for 0 to 5 and particularly for infants and toddlers. We need to think about the big picture here and get all of this together. So thanks.
Thank you. And then Janice LaFleau.
Madam Chair, my name is Chad Dunkley. I'm CEO of New Horizon Academy. And first, I do want to thank you for having this hearing. This field's been under a lot of stress, as you can see. And we like to be able to express ourselves. But I just wanted to add a few things. I wasn't going to speak that I think are new. So many people said powerful things today. It's been really emotional. But one, people should know more about this federal rule stuff. I had the chance to work with Representative John Klein from the 2nd District in Minnesota and even Senator Franken's office. As a matter of fact, Minnesota legislators in Congress in Washington had the most to do with improving these federal requirements. And you know what I just read? Minnesota asked for the third most amount of waivers to the federal requirements. How embarrassing is it that our leaders in Congress, who can hardly get anything done because of partisan politics in Washington, are getting more done and expecting more for kids than we are in Minnesota? I think that's tragic. We asked for 10 waivers. Guess who's not on the waiver list? Mississippi. Arkansas, North Dakota, these are states that are not asking for waivers at all, and we're asking for 10. Most states ask for 2 or 3. So we are so far from minimum federal requirements, we should be ashamed of ourselves. Number two, wages came up. As a provider, I can tell you that what keeps me up at night is what we have to be able to pay our really hardworking staff. And the only thing a provider controls for an expense is wages. We can't pay less in property taxes or less for food or less for rent. That's what we control. And the two times in the last 13 years that we finally dealt with reimbursement rates, every single time I took every dollar and increased my staff wages by the full amount of that increase. And that's what we all want to do. And it's really hard to watch family child care providers leaving the field because you look at a cost of care study they did 10 years ago, family child care providers were paying themselves less than minimum wage. When you count all the hours worked because you're working 15 hours a day, all the expenses of providing it, too long we're suffering and not paying the right rates, and then the fact that middle-income families need help too. These tax credits would help. That it's a labor-intensive business, and every single Minnesota family needs some kind of financial help to get access, and most of that help needs to go back to paying our staff what they deserve, and I think that's really important. Providers don't want to pay less than they are. They just have no choice. It's the only thing we can control. And number three, I think people pointed out something that even the federal requirements will only help slightly, and that is there is some broken county systems. There are many counties, and we have many centers that know if they get a certain county worker in a certain county, the family's doomed. There's no way they're going to get authorizations done, even if we do every step with the parent. We cross off every T, every box, have every form signed in, and we send it ourselves. It gets lost, the worker doesn't get to it, and a family loses authorization and goes onto a waiting list. That has to be better. Kids are suffering, and even when families do their job. So this is a broken system, but there is so much to be improved, and we should be ashamed of ourselves that we haven't done more.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Janice LaFleau, and I'm the founder and primary guide at the Montessori American Indian Child Care Center in St. Paul. We are a new child care center, and had I took my blinders off 2 years ago, I would have listened more. But we're still in it, and we work hard every day to serve the most invisible community in Minnesota. How many of you look and see Indian children? I get the pleasure of getting to see them every day, and they're wonderful. But nearly every one of them took a lot of work to get in with us, including being on the CCAP wait list. We have, of the families we serve, only three that are actually being funded through CCAP. And it was because they had to do that, was to get on welfare to become eligible for child care assistance. The rest of our families are on the wait list. And so we worked hard to figure out other funding sources to bring those families in, including becoming a four-star parent aware rated program, becoming AMI certified, becoming this, becoming that, working with Head Start, working with, to ensure that the majority of the tuition we have to charge for child care is being paid. Pathway one, pathway two is happening, kind of. So my real important question tonight is to ask, how many Indian kids are being served by CCAP? How many Indian kids are being served by CCAP? So as you take your work forward, remember that it's not just communities of color, it's not just low income. I am here because I am most concerned about the most invisible children in our communities, especially in the urban area. Thanks.
Madam Chair, person, our state legislators, my name is Barbara Mylan. I am the executive director of Phyllis Wheatley Community Center. We have the oldest continuously operating early child development center in the state of Minnesota. I am glad that I attended the program. Thank you, Representative Mullery, for your outreach into the community to invite us to be here this evening. To Legislator Flanagan, and I don't know you, but I know you're a legislator too. You know, I want to say that I am proud of the state of Minnesota. We had the highest investment in early child development in the United States of America. I respect my colleagues who have spoken eloquently, who have spoken from experience for what they know. We can make it work a lot better than it is working now. The purpose of the hearing, I believe, is so that you have more information so that you can look at this systematically and make it work for all of our children. There have been comments about the academic achievement gap. We know that if we invest in our children at a very early age, the research indicates longer term our chances are very good in closing the achievement gap. I heard something recently, I think it is one of our presidential candidates, is very interested in, who was, I think was here last night, interested in universal preschool. The only way universal preschool is going to work is that it also links with our community-based centers and with our family child care providers. We have to stop looking at a system that benefits more for a public entity whether it's a school system or a government entity, your community organizations, your family providers, we are the ones who are there. We are the ones that are filling the gap. We do not want a system to continue that is an imbalance. We are not able to access resources unless a public entity provides the application. I'm referring to the decision for bonding financing for early child development centers. We can't access that money unless the application is supported by or submitted by a public entity. We have said to the public entity, a school system or another entity, we're going to be responsible for it financially, but your name has to be on this application. Something is wrong with that type of system, especially when you have organizations that have existed for a long period of time. We are focusing, we have to be focused on our children. We have to be focused on how we are investing and making sure that our families and our children are better off longer term. For a state that has much, we have an expectation that our state continues to do well. I think our governor has done good. I think our legislators have indicated that they support early child development. I implore you today to make our system work better, more efficiently, and more effectively. We are here tonight because we want you to hear what is going on systematically. You have the power to make the changes that need to be made. I know that our county legislators, as well as our city legislators, will listen when they hear from the state of Minnesota. And we're behind you. We appreciate the support that you have provided, but we can make this better for our children and for our families. Thank you.
And then we, this 7:54, and we have this room until 8 o'clock. So we're just going to have to do a lightning round.
I had a 10-minute speech. Buenas tardes. I'm glad to be here. I've learned a lot. I really appreciate the wonderful comments that have been made. I've been moved by your comments. My name is Dennis Vigil. I'm an early childhood educator, have been for about 86 years or so. Long time, been involved mostly with Latino families, immigrant families, and what's ubiquitous is that you never see immigrant families in settings like this. And I wonder why. It makes me very sad. We need parents of all voices to be involved in this process. And I thank you, Joe, for putting that point out about people of color being present. That's a real challenge. I want to tell you that the Latino immigrant families are typically invisible. Somebody just mentioned that with the natives. We've got to do something about that. We have to do something about that. So I want to tell you that 70% of Latino families use family, friend, and neighbor care, FFN. These FFN providers are beautiful. They're loving. They have a lot of cariño, a lot of love for the children. They want to help the children that they're caring for. It could be their nieces. It could be their neighbor's child. They want to do the best they can for the children, but they have no training. Somebody just mentioned that, no training. So what do? They love them, they feed them, and they put them in front of a television and nap them. No training. And then we wonder why when these children come to kindergarten and they're assessed, 20% of those children are not school ready because they're not receiving any cognitive, language, early childhood education support. I'll tell you one thing, you know how many of white kids are school ready? 80%. So in this case, we have an 80-20 split, and then we wonder and scratch our head about the student-to-prison pipeline. And I'm going to tell you, as an early childhood provider, I am so convinced that 0 to 5 makes the person. And I have a little concerns about legislation and legislators. I'm going to be honest. somehow they seem to be thinking over a two-year span, which is the election period. Why don't we get legislators to think about 20 years from now, make a commitment and an investment to early childhood education so we could break away from the prison line that exists right now? The gap, I'm an educator, as I said, the gap in the 70s, I was around in the 70s, the gap between Latinos and white students was 40 points of proficiency. Typically, Anglos were 80% proficient, Latinos 40. 1970s, early 1970s, guess what it is in 2015? 40 points. What's changed? We have to do bold action. And I thank you for having this. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know what you're going to do with all of this. I've had previous experiences. But I thank you all for voicing. We need more bold, courageous voices from all voices, all peoples, because all children are beautiful and valuable. Thank you.
Okay, so we have 1 minute left. So we have 1 minute.
So you're going to have to make it fast so she can get.
Yep.
I'm Karen Smith from Little Voyagers Montessori School, and our program's been around for 48 years. And I just want to reiterate a couple things, because you're here for CCAP, is I've had parents, and one just recently, that when they moved from one county to another, they lost their benefits. And she did not know that until after she moved. And so there was nothing she could have done about it. And she said, had I known that, I would not have moved. So guess who's eating it? I am, because I think it's very important for this child. This is the stable environment that child has. The other one is I had a family, and the last one is just going to be leaving on for kindergarten, is the family, because they don't work for a normal employer. They work like in the arts field, and one job might be at one place and another place, because it's not consistent, they can't stay on. I've never met a family that's been on and off and on and off and always giving records. So when you tell me that they even had 6 months and now it's going to be a year, that never happened for that family. And I had another one that did that, and they were only on 1 month, and then all of a sudden it'd be off, and then they'd be on. So when we talk about inconsistencies, that's where I'm concerned about with the CCAP program. And the last thing I want to say is there is a big variation between county workers. They're respectful to us as providers and the families, and also being helpful. And it's sad to say that some of the people are really cruel and mean to some of these families and have them in tears, and we try to pull it together for them, and when we call, we don't get much respect either. Thank you.
My name is Shawnee Twite, and I'm connected with PICA Head Start, but I'm also a community member of North Minneapolis, and I represent a lot of our children. I don't currently work, so I spend a lot of my time in the community with our children, doing various things and working with all types and ages. I want to say one thing is that our kids in our community now aren't just being raised by parents. They're being raised by grandparents that are being left behind in the system. And those kids are getting left behind in the system because those grandparents aren't getting the resources that they need so they can get their grandkids in to a high-quality education and get them into a road where they can continue to grow. And I want to say that that is the main thing that's missing out here, too, is that we're failing to realize that it's not just parents out here raising kids. It's not just single parents. But we have grandparents out here that are trying to raise kids on their incomes, and they're not getting additional help. You know, and I just want to say that, you know, we want to make sure that there's resources for all of our families out there, whether it be a single parent, whether it be a two-house parent, whether it be a grandparent. We need to make sure that there's resources for these kids out there at all age levels, at all family levels. I also want to say that in North Minneapolis, we are dealing with a lot of tragedy in our families, in our households. And I think that the resources slack there, too. And we try to reach out to our families, but these children are suffering in these households and in these communities because of the lack of resources that we're reaching out to and helping these families get through these tragedies and helping our communities get through these tragedies. Our children are suffering. Not just one, but all of our children are dealing with this because they go to school. They play with each other. They talk to each other. They know what's going on.
You know, so it's not just us. We need to help our children every way that we can, not just with our education in our communities. We need to reach out. And it starts in our early childhood. It starts in our community. It starts with us. And that's all I want to say. Thank you.
All right. And so that wraps up the committee.
May I introduce myself real quickly? I'm sorry. I know that this is very short time. My name is Rachel Ann Preston, and I'm from Seattle, Washington. I'm here in Minneapolis because of many of the things you've been speaking about. I'm working with a group of 14 individuals, many of whom are in the back right here, of all nationalities, of all, but they're all drawn together with a willingness to help your community and to help Minnesota. Right now we're working with Rich Learning, which is brain-based learning on arts-based platforms, basically bringing the education into the youngest and to the people who need it most. Right now we're working with Ms. Barbara and the Phyllis Wheatley Center to put on education programs for 3 to 5-year-olds because, just like we've all heard, that is the age where brain-based learning is needed for the growth for throughout the 20 years, throughout the 40 years, and for a lifetime. So, yes, if you have children who are interested in joining with the group, please talk with Ms. Barbara or Dr. Rich, who is a part of this. But our group has come all over the country, North Carolina, Texas, Seattle, Washington, to Minnesota to help and be a part of this time. So thank you.
Okay, and that concludes. I want to thank each and every one of you for being here and taking the time. And certainly your voices have been heard, and we look forward to taking your concerns back down to St. Paul and also when we start that task force. And I expect that many of you will be attending those task force when that is, when we actually get that officially moved. Right now the state office building has been flooded, so I'm not exactly sure when we're going to get going on that task force. But as soon as it is, you will be notified, and look forward to hearing more from you then. So thanks for being here, and safe travels home.